Continuing mitzvah Taf Lamed 430, the mitzvah of Birkas Hamazon, and the Sefer Chinuch is not only talking about Birkas Hamazon, of benching, he's going to throw in halachos of brachos in general. So here he was just talking about the idea of bracha rishona, which on a deraisa level does not exist at all. The idea of making a bracha before eating, but rather the Chachamim instituted it because of a svara like that it's not proper that all the stuff in the world belongs to God, so we shouldn't take it before we at least acknowledge that God was kind enough to give it to us. So Chachamim instituted, it's an institution, Derabbanan, that we have to make a bracha before we eat as well, a shorter version, obviously, than the Birkas Hamazon. And he says, V'yeshmi rabosenu shadayta nomer ki atorah techayvenu bracha achar kol shiva saminim. So now we're reverting back to the dinim deraisa, that with on a deraisa level, again, exists only after eating and not before eating. So some of the sages tell us that the Torah says that we have to make a bracha achrona after all the seven species with which Eretz Yisrael was blessed. What does it say? Eretz chito seora, wheat and barley. Eretz chito seora, gefen useina verimon, and the grapes and figs and pomegranates. Eretz zeis shemen, and of olive oil, but olives in general. Oil olives, not olive oil. Oil olives. Zeis shemen, not shemen zayis. Zeis shemen. Oil olives. Not olive oil.
One can produce oil rather than simply,
Correct.
Pickled olives or something?
Yeah, so olive oil was a much more highly prized commodity than pickled olives. So therefore, oil olives was better than saying, oh, you can get, your land produces, you know, those olives you get in a jar. So that's like, okay. But oil olives, that's the Gishmaka land. Yes, all olives have oil in them, but not, that's like you can make wine out of any grape. But not all grapes are really suitable for proper wine production. Okay. Also, quantity, some olives are oilier than others.
Okay, you eat a jar of olives, you make an olive mechia?
Not an olive mechia, olive peros.
You make
olive peros. But main shalosh, yeah, you make the same. Yep. I wouldn't advise eating a whole jar of olives in one sitting, though.
No, I don't.
So, if you want to, okay.
You have to eat a kezias, though, right?
You have to eat a kezias, but how many olives is a kezias?
How many?
No, serious, a serious question.
One.
How many olives is a kezias?
One.
No! Two!
What kind
you
of
don't
olives?
Count the pit!
Oh, alright.
Seriously?
It's
two olives is a kezias because the pit, you don't eat the pit, so in order to actually have amount of food that's the size of an olive, you actually need to eat two olives. So two olives is a kezias. Again, for kezias, we're talking about medium sized olives. So you have if you have a tiny, tiny, tiny olive, it could potentially be more than two. But if you eat two medium-sized olives, then you make an ala peros.
But are our olives the same as those?
Yup.
That's
because they say that theirs were much bigger. No.
No, they actually there is at least several olive trees that are thousands of years old, which still produce fruit. And
isn't
guess
amazing?
What? Same size fruit.
The olive pits they found olive pits at Masada. They're the same size as olive pits nowadays. There's no evidence whatsoever that the olives nowadays are smaller than they used to be. Also, the eggs. We actually have eggs from Pompeii.
Wow.
They were preserved in volcanic ash.
Wow.
Only a few years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So they're the same size or a little bit smaller than eggs, but there's no evidence for that whatsoever. The whole thing was invented by the Tzlach. The Tzlach says you have a problem that the measure of revius is given by Chazal both in terms of thumb widths, which is two by two by 2.7, I think, thumb widths. And, two by 2.7 thumb widths. And it's also given as an egg and a half. So the Tzlach said, these two measurements don't jive. So how could that be? That if you measure with a thumb width, it comes out much bigger than if you measure as an egg and a half. So it comes out about twice the size. So it must be that eggs nowadays are half the size of what they were in the times of Chazal. So first of all, again, there's no evidence for that. There are other terutzim for the question of the Tzlach. And second of all, even if it were true, it doesn't matter. The Geonim say, the Geonim write in Shuvas explicitly, that the reason that the Torah gave the Shiurim in terms of eggs and olives is so that it should be easy for each person to estimate the correct shear based on what is found in that time.
Right. We all have thumbs, we all have forearms. And, you know,
right. Well, no. The length measurements are more standardized. Okay. That's not true. Yeah. But in terms of the Kezias and the Kibetza, they said the whole point is that people should... So even if it did change, the shear changed with it. So it doesn't matter. So that's why, really, the shear of a Kezias is the size of an olive. So for Pesach, in terms of achilas matzah, so the there's another thing, which is that not only the idea of things got twice as reduced by half, rather, but rather there was another issue that the Rishonim in Northern Europe never saw olives.
No, they didn't exist in any outside of sight.
Right, France, so the Mediterranean olives only grow in the Mediterranean warm areas. Right. So they didn't know how big an olive was. So they based on various passages in the Gemara that talks about how many eggs can you swallow at once, how many olives can you swallow at once. So they estimated that a kezias was about half the size of an egg. So everybody, nowadays we know that olives are much smaller than half the size of an egg. So if they had known, they were Rishonim who came from Northern Europe and they traveled to Eretz Yisrael, and they write explicitly that... In Europe, we thought that it was half the size of an egg, but I came here. I see olives. They are much smaller than that. So you have to be modal emes. Now that we know how big an olive is, we should go buy the kezias. But in terms of Pesach, so the Shulchan Aruch does say, yesh omrim, because that's what was recorded about the topic, even though Shulchan Aruch knew how big an olive was. But he says, yesh omrim, that kezias is half the size of an egg. So that's why and he brings that only by achilas matzah, because it's d'oraisa, even though, again, it's probably not correct at all, but in terms of just showing deference that opinion for achilas matzah, anyway, you're supposed to eat more than a minimum shear, that the kezias for Seder night is only an absolutely minimum shear. So since we're dealing with a d'oraisa, and since it's a mitzvah to eat more matzah than necessary on Seder night anyway, so that's why it's recommended for those who are healthy and can handle it, to eat much more than the minimum shear of a kezias, so more like half an egg. But it doesn't have to be enormous shearim. The enormous shearim are
in the size of a matzah. How big is an egg? How would you estimate?
Don't you have one of those handy little
Yeah, there? I don't. Those are. I really don't like those.
The size of a credit card.
Why don't you like? Is it
really accurate? The real kezias.
Real kezias.
It's about the size of a credit card.
So
yes.
Two credit cards.
Really?
Not two credit cards. You're talking about a half an egg.
Oh.
Not twice the size of a real olive. We're talking about the wrong direction. That maybe an olive is half the size of an egg. Not that an egg is twice the size of a regular olive.
Okay.
So how much? Estimate. That's the whole point of this year. Until you feel you've eaten about the half the size of an egg. So you estimate. People say, I don't know. It also depends on a lot of things because hand matzahs are different thicknesses.
Yeah.
So if you have charedim hand matzah, which everybody goes gaga over how delicious they are, I haven't actually tasted it in many, many years. Everybody goes gaga over how delicious they are because they're so, so thin. So then you need a lot. Maybe you need a half, two-thirds of a matzah, possibly. But if you have...
$20 worth.
If you have a satmar matzah, so the satmar matzah in the satmar bakery is very thick, hard to choose, so then you need much less than that. So it's hard to give an exact share. That's why I recommend just estimating. I don't know, I usually give people I think my matzahs are medium-sized thickness, so I usually give people... like about this much. Not that it's required because that's the Ikar Adin Shear, but I don't know, something like that. Imagine a circle.
For Achilas Matzah, right?
For Achilas Matzah, yeah.
And the other one?
Yeah, for the Afikomen. Well, for Korech, you could definitely have less. But the for Achilas Matzah and the Afikomen, so something about that big. But I tell people that is not the Ikar Adin. Just give people extra, you know, so you have more if you like. Mm. Yeah. So those are the oil olives, Eretz Yishem and Udvash, and also dates. So dates are used to make honey. Okay. Kemo shenischayavnu be'emes levarich achar oso mehen shezanin kemo tamarim v'yayin udvelas te'enim. So even the ones that are not, don't really satiate you, like pomegranates. But dates and wine and figs do satiate you. So that for sure he thinks is the raisa. Okay? Very, very interesting. It says right after that, and thou shalt eat, and thou shalt be sated, and thou shalt bless. So we mentioned last time that there is a disagreement among the poskim as to what it means to be satiated. So some poskim write that it means it's subjectively, that if you're not sated, then you don't have to bless me the raisa. And some say that no, when Rabbi Yehuda, I think, in the Mishnah talks about a kibetza, that he means that's the shir deraisa, that when you eat a kibetza, that's considered to be a satiation on a deraisa level.
Sorry, we're talking about olives. What's the status of olive oil? I mean, wasn't olive oil considered very much like wine or certain things, a derivative of a kush of, you know?
Yeah, the Gemara, in the beginning of Parakeitz and Mevarchim, it talks about why we don't have a special bracha for olive oil, the same way we do have for wines. So you don't make a bari priya eitz on wine. You make a bari priya geffen. You have a completely different bracha to show the exalted status of wine. So why do you have an equivalent bracha to show the exalted status of olive oil? The answer is because most people don't eat olive oil plain.
What bracha would it be if you drink?
Oh, so it's a machlokes is that if you drink plain olive oil, whether it's a shahakol, it's not even bari priya, it's a shahakol, or whether you make no bracha. The Gemara says there is one situation where you do make a bracha of bari priya eats on olive oil, which is when you mix it with like a vegetable soup. Let's say your throat hurts, and you want to make a tonic, a homemade tonic for your throat. So mostly you want the olive oil because it's sharp, so it gets your throat to submit, you know, it stimulates it or something. So you mix the olive oil with vegetable soup, but it's mostly olive oil. The main reason you're eating this mixture is for the olive oil, not for the vegetable soup. So then the Gemara says you make Gemara Prihaitz. But ordinarily, in theory, yes, if people drank olive oil straight, so then there should be a separate bracha for it, the same way there's a separate bracha for wine. So what about this idea that you have to make that the bracha main shalosh is deoraisa on, not that exact text necessarily, but the idea you have to make a bracha after eating all the seven species is a din deoraisa. How do we know that? Mimash amru bereish perakeitz ad ba'osa shakla v'tarish ab gemara limtzuchi a bracha deoraisa. So there's the Gemara says, you know, how do we know that you have to make a bracha also before you eat? So it suggests various things. It's not really deoraisa in the final stage of the discussion, but it's talking about finding a source in the Bible for the idea of blessing before. Amru sham ma sheva samin and davar shenev nevaton bracha av kol shenena ton bracha. So it says over there, when you're trying to learn out a deraisa source, so it says, what, the shivas haminim, the seven species, so something that you enjoy and requires a bracha afterwards, so too, anything that you enjoy requires a bracha. So it sounds like even things that are just enjoyable, like pomegranates, that are not actually satiating, you have to make a bracha afterwards on a deraisa level. So it seems like a pretty good raya. V'nira mikan, shein chilek b'shivas haminim bein osan azanim eim la'achirim shebechulan chayo bracha min ha-Torah. So the Sefer HaChinuch accepts the idea certainly that in all the Shiva Samin and the Bracha Meim Shalosh, that all the Shiva Samin that satiate, the Bracha Meim Shalosh is deraisa, and the ones that do not satiate might also be deraisa, but that he's not quite sure about. Aval Mikol Moko Marisia Rambam Zal, but this is the one we know and love, the Shita we know and love. The Achir Imo Shinirli Midivrayam Lomar She'ein Ikarchiyo Bracha deraisa Lachila Svias Mazon. It's only on actually eating bread. Bilal Sharminin Aval Pi Shehein Mishiva Saminin. Only, the Rambam says explicitly bread. Here he doesn't say explicitly bread. It could be he's just talking about the species of grain. It could be that the way he's presenting it, you might understand that, I was presenting it here in this sentence, you might understand that it's any of the five species of grain, even if you make like a porridge out of it, that you're chayef to eat, you make a bracha on it, the rice level afterwards. So pomegranates and grapes that are not wine. So the Gemara assumes that wine is more satiating than grapes. This is very odd because wine you think is the opposite. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you can base a meal on wine, can't you? There's some.
What do you mean base a meal on wine?
In other words, is it some idea that, for example, like a with makom suda. In other words, make your suda based upon wine rather than bread. Is that some idea?
Well, it depends on what context. So some people say it counts for kiddush b'makom suda, that halacha, which is more lenient. So kiddush b'makom suda, the rule you have to make kiddush in the place of the meal. So the Geonim write that it not necessarily that you have to wash and or eat bread for this wash. We're gonna you have to eat bread immediately following the kiddush. It could be that if you have like a snack, starting the meal with a snack, and then you go finish the meal elsewhere, you could also make kiddush in the first place. You don't have to make kiddush again at the second place. So some write that that would apply to wine. That if you drink the whole becher of wine or an extra cup of wine, maybe. So then that would count as kiddush makom suda. You could just make kiddush, drink wine, eat whatever you want, and then go home right away and have hamotzi. So that's a shayla. The way people do it nowadays is not necessarily what the Geonim really had in mind. That the way the Geonim describe it is that you're essentially beginning your Shabbos suda by the drinking of the wine, or the eating of the mezonos, for those poskim who write that way. And then you go finish the suda elsewhere. So that doesn't mean, seemingly, that what some people do, let's say you like to daven hashkama. So some people go to hashkama minyan, then they make kiddush, then they have a little mezonos or a cup of wine and fruit or whatever, and then the rest of your family is davening regular minyan. So you go home, you read the paper, you have a nap. I'm not saying you're allowed to read newspapers on Shabbos, so just an example. You go home to learn. You go home to learn. You take a nap, you go for a walk, and then you sit down for the Shabbos Suda at 12 p.m. So that's already hours and hours and hours since you had Kiddush. So it could be that they go in and say, no, you have to make Kiddush again now, of course. So some people don't make Kiddush because they make Kiddush already. By the main suda because they make kiddush already in shul, but that's not what they meant. It's not that that counts as the meal for the extent that your kiddush for that works for the rest of the day. It means if you go somewhere, you eat, you start your meal with a snack, and then you go home immediately, and you continue the suda. Essentially, that works for kiddush and makom suda. So that's why I always recommend to people that is better because people usually have a long hefsek between the kiddush and shul and going home. So I always recommend to people that they should make kiddush again at home.
But normally you do anyway. I mean, there's no problem about
making, maybe you do because you're extra.
I'm saying though that it's not like, for example, kiddush Friday night where you know you can't, you know, there's a actual bracha for the kiddush which you don't want to.
Oh sure, yes, of course,
This is just breaking up in. I mean, you can make 10 of that.
You're 100% right, but it's not so pashit that you wouldn't be allowed to make the bracha again in such a situation. That if you want to make kiddush in order to matter you to eat something and then make kiddush again by the suda even Friday night, it's not so pashit that wouldn't work. That's the recommended practice. Also, Rav Soloveitchik held that we should only rely on the Shitas HaGeonim Shabbos morning and not Friday night. Because he wanted to be mitzarif also, that there are many, many Rishonim hold that you're allowed to eat before Kiddush Shabbos morning, but not Friday night. He said it's a tziruf. Some say not everybody agrees that it works to make Kiddush on Mizonos and then continue your meal elsewhere. But if you don't have that shita, so you have a backup. It's like a svek sveka. You have a backup that you're at least relying on the shitas of Rishonim that you're allowed to eat before Kiddush. So it's not like you have two shitas to rely on over here. So that's why he felt that we should not rely on this Friday night. And that's why the practice that many shuls do, that they let Simchas Torah night, if you have long, long, long hakafis. So many shuls, not like our shul, yes. So they have a kiddush Simchas Torah night. In the middle of the hakafis, they go, they make Asher Bachar Banu Mikalam, the whole long kiddush. And then have mizonos, and then people go home and have their sudas. So that's that practice. Again, I'm not saying there's nothing to rely on. I'm not saying if Rav chooses that's the appropriate practice for his community. I'm not saying it's absolutely wrong. I'm just saying there is what to quibble with that practice. Yeah.
Practically speaking, in those shuls where the women really don't do very much in Simchas Torah, so the guys are whatever and, you know, dancing around and making kiddush like you just described. And stuff.
Yeah.
So then when the guys go home, shouldn't they be making kiddush for their wives and kids?
Oh, sure. So that's better. Yeah, yeah. If you know you're going to make kiddush again at home anyway, because you have to make it for your wife or kids, whatever, so then that's not so bad, the kiddush in shul. Because there, you made Kiddush, so you exempted yourself from the prohibition of eating before Kiddush.
Uh-huh.
And then the issues of Kiddush B'makom Suda, of whether you're supposed to, now you get home, if you're just eating alone, so you get into an issue of whether you're supposed to make Kiddush again or not. But if you're making Kiddush again anyway, so it's for sure not a bracha levatala, so you're being motzi, someone else. So that is much better. Again, I personally... I think that by night we're more nervous. The halachos are more stringent about eating before kiddush, about kiddush b'makom suda. So I think that the more glatt practice is, you just have the kiddush by night. You just have the kiddush in a place where you eat the actual bread suda. Again, but those who do otherwise have on what to rely. Yeah.
You bench afterwards where you ate the meal. You don't go back to the first place.
Of course, yeah.
So why do nowadays make kiddush on Friday night in shul?
Because it used to be that you would have guests who would be eating in shul every Friday night, and they make kiddush on their behalf. And the takana, so that's two shitas. One shita is that if there are no guests eating in shul, you shouldn't make kiddush. And others hold that no, it was a takana that you always make kiddush in shul in case there are guests eating there. Also, some poskim write that the kiddush in shul is also a good idea because there might be some people in attendance who won't be making kiddush at home. So at least they have this. Again, it's not b'makom suda. Yeah, you can be mevakbek. Okay. Yes. But at least they have this. So you shouldn't be mevatel the kiddush in shul because, you know, certainly I remember in my travels in Europe, I've been to many communities that are nominally, you know, the shul is Orthodox. So, you know, but the rabbi is Orthodox. They might have a few people who are Shomer Shabbos, but... The general community, even though they associate with, you know, they would never go to, you know, Reform temple, but they are not personally observant at all. So that's why I think it's a certain communities where they had a kiddush Friday night also, because at least people should be yotze kiddush deraisa, for those old kiddush on wine is deraisa. Yeah, it's very we're not used to that here in America. At least in the olden days, maybe not. But in America nowadays, most people, I think, who go to not everyone, of course, but most people who go to Orthodox synagogues are at least some measure of in the ballgame. Yes, that's a good way of putting it.
But it's only Friday night.
And the fact is,
right.
I'll go home, but we have the candles, the left.
I would still say, I mean, I have not, there's not a statistic, but I would assume that the majority of people who are active and participating members of Orthodox synagogues in 21st century America are at least nominally Shomer Shabbos and Kashrus.
Yeah,
and
back in the
days, I think the 30s or 40s, people used to go to Hashkama Minyan and then they went home
go to work.
Kiddush, and then they went to work.
Mm-hmm.
At least they did that. You got to give. They were still
vaguely
in the ballgame. They weren't becoming Catholics. They weren't becoming evangelical Christians. And they were putting food on the table.
Vaguely. That's a pretty big commitment to get Hashkama.
That's exactly what I was trying to say. Thank you.
Right.
I didn't want to be deflating when I put, but really, I mean, you got to give them credit. They
but
they did what they thought they had
didn't
to do.
That.
I know,
it's also
no, they didn't.
The other way around.
Totally get
it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that any of us face that kind of
pressure. But you know, we just do not put us
through
test.
Okay. Yeah. No, certainly we're not. We have to. It's an important historical sugya. Of course, we don't judge.
And maybe
totally
they gave their kids enough knowledge of what you're really sort of supposed to do that their kids had something to hold on to, and you know the kids at least had something in their heads about what it meant to be observant.
Right, 100%. Certainly better than nothing. Absolutely. So these, as opposed to dried figs, which are more satiating, and opposed to wine, which is also funny because wine usually we assume makes people hungrier. You eat more when you drink wine. Alcohol makes you...
Is that because you're hungry or it's because you're losing your inhibition?
No, it's because you're losing your inhibition. The alcohol makes you... It suppresses your your natural instinct to stop eating. So that's why what it says in the Gemara that Rava used to drink wine all day on Erev Pesach in order to ensure that he'd be very hungry for the Seder.
Wow. And he wasn't drunk?
Well, you have to remember, like we were discussing last night, so wine in the times of Chazal was 3-4% alcohol, approximately, because they mixed it with water. So if he had a cup of that, you know, continuously throughout the day, every hour or something, so that's not particularly, alcoholic.
Hands up.
Okay. Mikevan de lo zaini. So these fruits, which do not really satiate, ki haTorah lo sechayev elo al hamazon. Only stuff that's actually satiating. It says, "Eretz asher lo b'miskenus tochal ba'lechem," that with not in poverty you shall eat bread. The hadar v'achalta v'savata. Then it says, "And thou shalt eat and be satisfied." V'algedolim shebedoreinu nishma b'mitzvah zatorah. So the Sefer Chinuch says, "No, he doesn't." The Rambam is very big, but he prefers the more contemporary Gedolim and their Shita, that anything, potentially anything that is in the Shiva Saminim is Chayav in a Bracha Midaraisa, a Bracha Achrona. So you have to be very careful. V'achar Achrona Zoim Nistapik Loim Berech Mein Shalosh Achar Kol Shiva Minim Chayav Levarech Misofik. So you have an important halacha over here that comes out from this, which we don't actually follow nowadays because we're concerned for the opinion that the bracha mein shalosh might potentially be the rabbanan entirely, and it's only because I'm Muslim, that's the raisa. But he says that if you eat a barley pudding, porridge, and or a piece of cake is more chumar, because a piece of cake is more bread-like. But if you eat something like that, and then you forgot to make, you forgot if you made a alamichia or not, you have to say again alamichia.
Could you actually say about pizza? When you're,
what about pizza?
Right. Okay. Well, there's this famous shita, you know.
Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe?
Yeah.
If I'd known you were going to say something in the name of Moshe, I wouldn't have made that face. Okay, yeah.
What? Oh, okay.
I
mean,
it's always said in his name.
Yeah.
Well, one slice is Mizonas, two slices.
Well, he's basically speaking as a snack. He's under the impression there's a snack, you know. Like it wasn't anything. Although, you know, the thing about pizza, though, is it is bread.
It is bread.
It is made out of bread dough. It's real bread dough.
100%. That's why you have a machlokis, which is, if something is mamish bread dough, but it's made into a type of food that is eaten as a snack, is that mizonos or is that hamotzi?
So French toast, you know.
French?
Oh, French toast is bread already.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, no, that's... So that would apply also to soft pretzels, for example. Soft pretzels is bread dough, but it's made into a form that's eaten exclusively as a snack and not as part of a meal.
Or melba toast.
What?
Melba toast is not also bread already?
That's bread. Right.
It looks like
bread.
Yeah. It's like thin slices of
bread. It's like dried out bread.
That's why we don't have it at our kiddushes, because
the box says Mizonos on it.
It does?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's like the airline roll saying Mizonos on it.
Right. So melba toast, but it is made crunchy.
It starts out
It's momish crunchy, yeah. So that maybe that does make it Mizonos. But it starts out as bread. I have to look at exactly how it's made.
It looks like bread.
Okay, but the pizza... So that's why pizza is subject to that machlokes, because that's mamish bread dough. But first of all, this would only apply if it's something that's eaten as a snack. I think nowadays people don't eat pizza as a snack. People eat pizza as a meal.
Well, sometimes it's a snack and sometimes it's a meal.
Really? You've had a piece of pizza as a snack?
Absolutely.
No.
I don't know. I'm not.
But I'm on the go and I'm fortunate enough to pass a kosher pizza place. And it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I didn't have lunch yet. I might get one piece of pizza, because I'm too cheap to buy two.
Well, okay. So
one piece of pizza. So it's sort of staving off with whatever until I get home and have lunch.
Okay. We have an interesting specimen over here in our halachic laboratory.
That's what I do.
In my experience, and maybe it was different in the 50s, I never heard this b'shem Reb Moshe. I've heard it just that the Olam says. So I think that, in my experience, people eat pizza as a meal and not as a snack. Mm-hmm. So therefore, for sure, there's no shaila that it's hamotzi. That's why, famously, we had a sheer luncheon with Rabbi Willig where we got to ask a question-answer session when I was a bachar years ago. So somebody said, what's the bracha on one slice of pizza? So he said, even on one crumb is hamotzi. So that's it. You might not have to wash for one crumb, wash a bench, but you have to make the bracha of hamotzi lechem
arutz. Oh, that's it. You might not have to wash.
As a small, less than a kizayis, you don't.
Yeah, I will say, if they serve, like at Monday Night Learning here or something, which I don't go to, so this is not experiential most of the time.
Yeah.
Or it's some learning. So they'll have a thing, and they'll have, beforehand, they'll put out some cookies, and maybe, if you're lucky, they'll have pizza. And people had one piece, and it really is a snack. I mean, it's after dinner. It's
okay, but there's a food. It doesn't matter what you're currently doing with it right now. If you have a slice of bread, you might be walking on the street, running to your next appointment, and you're starving, and you want to stave off your hunger. I found in your pocket a slice of bread. It's still bread. So that's the same thing. So I think that since pizza nowadays, since pizza nowadays is fundamentally a meal food, I think.
All right,
except in Yerushalayim, of course, where they don't even have a place to wash a lot of pizza places.
Really?
Yeah.
No. That's different. That's the place, the super, super kosher place, puts apple juice in all its pizza dough.
Ooh, that's also questionable. That's also questionable because...
But that's what they're doing. That's why they're doing it, which they'll explain.
And then, if you ask them, where do you wash? They say, huh? Yeah, wash.
So that's...
You bring along your little bottle of...
That's also questionable. Whether putting...
I eat it with a napkin, I think, or something like that.
But putting a rove of apple juice or fruit juice in the dough makes it vadai mizono. So the Eidah Charedis is very make-all on these things.
No.
Oh.
Wow.
Right, I think actually this pizza store is under them.
Yeah. Where?
King George. Anyway, we washed.
Yeah. Or no, we didn't wash.
Generally speaking, we take it to REAs.
They also write Mizonos rolls on their airline food. So that's why.
Except the OU has a little thing in there saying, "Do not listen to the."
I haven't seen that. But
Oh yeah.
No, and the kosher, super kosher meals on the flights from Israel out don't have also OU. They only have Ada.
Okay, so this is all on Delta.
Yeah,
they can only speak for Delta.
Yeah,
they used to have great food, and then they changed to Ada, so it's super kosher and awful.
Really?
I have seen something actually where the OU it's like some normal airline food, and the OU has their little insert and they're saying yes, everything is perfectly kosher and so on, and regardless of anything that you might hear, the rolls require washing and
really?
Mozi,
because the rolls are separately packaged.
Yeah.
I don't recall an OU. Okay, I don't know. You're on different airlines, but I don't recall ever flying to Israel and having an OU on the actual meal. I recall that on the meals from the U.S. to Israel, they have Volvarov, the package ones, the super kosher ones. And then on the ones back from Israel back, they have Eidah Charedis. That's my recollection.
Of course it does.
Right. I don't recall ever seeing these little inserts.
Okay.
But it is a problem. That's why if you have a hashgacha, that's what Rav Belsky said, had this line where the hashgacha writes on the what the bracha is on the package. So Rav Belsky says, halavai, the hashgacha should do a good job making sure the food is kosher. Leave the paskening to someone else. What kind of bracha it is, whether you have to wash or you have to bench. Don't tell me. I'm not interested in anything like that. Just tell me if it's kosher or not, and do a good job. I'm not gonna. This doesn't sell.
Yeah.
It's also the pressure again. Eidah Charedis is not very more than other hashgachas is not susceptible to the pressure of their clients. I'm not saying not completely, but less than other hashgachas. But part of it is that the bakeries want to sell this.
The Lubavitcher guy had a hot dog stand in front of Columbia University years ago, and he had Mizonos rolls because where are you gonna wash sitting out on the 116th Street in Broadway, right?
So it's there's no such thing as Mizonos rolls. That's the bottom line.
I wouldn't say that exactly. If the taste is clearly recognizable as being a sweet cake-like taste, and you eat it at the end of the meal and not at the beginning of the meal, then there's what to talk about. That would be Mizonos. But if you eat it at the beginning of the meal, that's called, or during the course of the meal, so that's what's called the kviya suda, that even if it's really Mizonos, mamish l'chol ha'deis, if you have a piece of chocolate cake, not that if you want a piece of chocolate cake in the middle of the meal, it's kviya suda. But if that's the main bread stuff that you're eating with your meal, then that's called kviya suda. And even if it's mamish mizono, so then it would be turn time motzi anyway.
And nobody puts a hot dog in the middle of two pieces of cake.
Oh, exactly. That shows that it's kviya suda, 100%. Unless, again, you could argue that a small hot dog in a bun would be a snack food. So if the bun were clearly a sweet type of roll. Right. So
then,
like a pig's in a blanket. So that,
otherwise, they don't make
But the Mizonos definitely, the regular, under normal circumstances, definitely one should wash on the Mizonos rolls or simply not eat them. Why do they include them in the airline meals? You need bread? Everybody needs bread with every meal? If people are worried they're not getting enough carbs, so eat a... It would give sort of a pasta or something. Whatever.
French fries. Baked potato.
Fine. Where are we? Oh, v'chein mistapi l'birkas ha-mazon afilu... So again, in his shita, maybe a kibetza is a manifestation of an objective shear of satiation. So therefore, if you ate a kibetza and then you forgot whether you benched, you have to bench again. So we don't assume like either of these things. We only assume that you have to bench again if you were sated and you mamish forgot if you benched. But if you only eat a kezayis, so it's only the rabbanan. Everybody agrees you would not have to bench again. So here the Sefer Chinuch brings the other shita that it's only if you're mamish sated. Which is not only a 21st century phenomenon that people fress like crazy on cake at a kiddush, and then they happily waltz out the door. No bracha achrona. Ah. Potentially a bittul mitzvah zasei deoraisa. Ve'ein echad afilu ama'aretz go. So they did it even in 14th century Barcelona. Ve'ein echad. Nothing changes. Ein chadash, right? Ve'ein echad afilu ama'aretz gomor mekel rikas amazon. Even the biggest ignoramus will not be negligent about benching. So that's based on the idea that the only daraisa is mamish after eating bread. So that seems to be the simple reading of the verses. Okay, with Rabbinic Judaism, we don't go by just you read the verse and you think you figure out what you think it means and you paskin accordingly. But still, that's gave an additional, since there is a legitimate shita like that, that's what's d'oraisa. So, and since that's what people who are not necessarily so learned and they're just reading Chumash, so that's what it seems to them from the Chumash, so therefore that's why they're more lenient about the main shalosh than for real benching. Nimtza inyan abrachos kenhu. Shechiyu mitzvah sator einu rak levarech achar amazon lo lefanov. The d'oraisa was only after eating. Over divrei achronim af al kol shiv asaminim an iskarim b'torah. And it's in my rebbeim, they said that you have to make bench midaraisa, not the full benching, but bracha main shalosh on any of the seven species. The minchas chinuch here brings an interesting machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid. Is what happens if you eat something not kosher? Do you make a bracha or not?
You were satiated, right?
You hold like the Ravid. So the Rambam holds that you do not make a bracha.
Before or after?
Correct.
How about after?
No, neither. The Rambam holds if you eat something not kosher, you don't make a bracha either before or after. And he bases this on the fact that it says that the Mishnah tells us you can't join in a zimun if you eat something not kosher. So the Ravid says, wait a minute, that's what we're talking about, joining in a zimun, because you can't join together with Jews who are makbid on kashrus if you ate something not kosher. If he's eating kosher, he's eating not kosher, you can't join together. But you do have to make a bracha. Two wrongs don't make a right. You might as well, if you really enjoy your ham sandwich, you might as well bench afterwards. Because, right? It seems a little odd. That's why the Rambam also brings the fact, and he doesn't bring it explicitly, but it might be based on the fact that the Gemara talks about how if you're mafresh challah from a dough that was made of flour that you stole, so that's not called blessing God, that's called cursing God.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're doing something wrong, so a blessing is like a slap in the face rather than a proper thanks of God. Pikuach nefesh. No, so if it's pikuach nefesh, so then you do make a bracha. If you're stuck on a desert island and the only food available is a wild boar that you have to kill and eat, and you're roasting it over the fire, and you're forced to eat that, otherwise you're going to starve to death, so then you make a shackle.
Wait, so if you steal flour...
Meat, yeah.
If you steal flour, okay,
yeah.
But then at that point, You own it. You own it, you know, illegitimately, but you own it, right? You know, so.
If you have yush, yes, yes, but still, since it came already from...
it's not like a lulav or something like that.
Right, even if you own it still, since it came from an illegitimate source, so then... It's still
and
like
maybe your chayv, what your chayv's about.
Maybe if it's ma'af shchala, maybe you shouldn't make a bracha.
How about developing a special bracha after bracha, like rubbing the grub, sense for the grub, yay God.
Oh, there is actually there is a minimum. Isn't there some idea with the absolute minimum?
Matbeya shetavu chachamim. Yeah, we talk about the text of the. So basically, first of all, Shulchan Aruch Paskin's like the Rambam that if you eat not kosher, then you don't make a bracha. I heard a funny story about this. That someone who was makbid on Yashan accidentally ate bread that didn't have Ashgacha for Yashan, so he didn't bench afterwards. That's not so pasha. First of all, it's only even if it doesn't have Ashgacha for Yashan, it doesn't mean it's Vaday Chodash. It means that,
even if it's Vaday Yashan, then it's...
Even if it's Vaday Chodash, so since there are shitas that hold that... Again, no one nowadays. If you're the Vilna Gaon, so the Vilna Gaon looked in the Gemara and he says, "I paskin absolutely. I'm 100% sure that the conclusion of the Gemara is that you have to keep Yashan and the Chodesh is Asur Deraisa and it's not allowed. And I'm 100% convinced and sure." So nobody. That's one thing. But if people nowadays are not, even if they want to be makbid on a certain chumrah, and generally speaking, it's not because they're on the level of learning. That they're 100% sure that this is the correct opinion. Or say that the shitas that hold it's okay are completely wrong and you ignore them completely. I don't. Nobody nowadays is on that such a level.
Well,
yeah.
One thing about, I mean, one might argue that at least you had food to eat, so you thank God that you had food to eat, even if it was trade. On the other hand, if you get in the habit of making a bracha on trade food, it habituates you to thinking it's okay. You know, it gets into your
ballgame. Probably not. I don't know.
So, probably better not.
The chol shar habrachas kulan hein midrabanan. The rest of the brachos are the rabanan. Chutz me'achas shemina Torah. There's one bracha that's midaraisa. V'cheinu v'forish b'gemara b'brachas. The Gemara talks about v'hi birkas haTorah lefaneha. That making, yeah.
Wait, isn't Asher Yatzar considered
Doraisa?
I thought, you know.
No, Asher Yatzar's not
Doraisa. I thought that he was a suffix, whether you have a chaya that you don't know.
Mm-hmm. If you don't remember, if you made Asher Yatzar, you don't make it again.
Oh, okay,
no.
All right. Oh, okay. And you don't need Kazayas either, right?
No. Even one drop is sufficient to make an Asher Yatzar. Agam. Haramban. That's if you finish. So if you go to the bathroom and you go a little bit and you feel that you're about you still haven't completely relieved yourself and you're gonna have to go again in a minute, so then you don't make an Asher Yatzar in between the two. Gam Haramban Zal. Somebody was at a Purim Suda once years ago, or someone was drinking a lot, so he was running to the bathroom every few minutes. So he came back and he was a little drunk, so he was making very loudly and with a lot of kavana Asher Yatzar each time he went to the bathroom. So somebody told him at the time that maybe he shouldn't make an Asher Yatzar after each time because he knows that he's not completely done. He's going again in just a couple minutes. So the discussion at the time. Vegam Haramban, it's not so much because maybe at the time he was completely thought he was finished, whatever it was. Vegam Haramban Zal, Yachshov Osa Mitzvah Saseh Bifnei Atzma, that the Ramban says that this is the actual Mitzvah Saseh to make Birkas HaTorah, even though the Rambam doesn't count it as one of the 613 Mitzvahs, the Ramban does. Vein Azesh Shechivanu Akel Baruchu Bracha Bekriyas HaTorah Lefaneu V'mazun La'acharav. So why on a Doraisa level offer food, it's an after bracha? And for learning Torah, it's a before bracha. Both are daraisa. Min adomesh atam lefi shu baruchu lo yishal min achomer lavdo lehodos betuva rach achar shi kabel pras mimenu. That when you're giving, when God is giving us something material to enjoy, so he doesn't expect us, again on a daraisa level, to thank him beforehand. Now once we've appreciated the gift that he's given us, so then we should say thank you. So in one's animalistic side, so you don't understand that you should give thanks until you have experienced the benefit from this thing. About Kriyas HaTorah, Shuchelek HaSeichel. When we're talking about Birkas HaTorah, that's intellectual. VaSeichel Yodeo Makir VeKodem Kabbalas HaTuelas Yavino. So, but intellectually, you can realize what a great gift the Torah is before you start doing it. So that's why you're supposed to thank God before you start learning Torah that day, and not at the end. Al kein yichayevenu akel lohodos lefanav kodem kriyas haTorah umodel emes yimtzatam idvar. If you think truthfully, then you'll agree with what I say. Yeah.
Women have to say Birkas haTorah.
100%, absolutely required. Women are otherwise, because there's also really an isser to learn. You're not supposed to learn before you say Birkas haTorah. So even though women are exempt from the formal mitzvah of Talmud Torah, it's unlikely that she's going to go the whole day without hearing any Torah. So, you know, if she says, if she forgets what bracha to make on something, and she asks, you know, nowadays she could look in Google or she could look it up herself, but in the olden days, you know, she asks her husband or her rabbi, you know, what bracha should I make on this? And he says, oh, you make, it's a candy, so it's not fruit, so you make a shahakol. So that's already Torah. So she's listening and experience. You're doing an exchange of Torah. So she has to make... She absolutely, women are required to make Birkas HaTorah in the morning. Absolutely. Ve'acharezos, after this, Nagi derech klal chiyuv ha-brachos derabonin, ve'im levarach kodem achilu, shtia b'chol davar sheish botam klal lachich, ve'acharav kemochein. So on a derabonin level, you have to make a bracha before and after foods that you enjoy. So this is talking about, again, foods that are inedible. You don't make a bracha. If you swallow a vitamin or something, or a medicine, so medicine for sure, you do not make a bracha. But if a medicine that's delicious, so what's a medicine that's delicious? Huh? Maybe some kids like certain brands of cough syrup because they find it very tasty.
Wait, so a kid then wouldn't have to make a bracha on broccoli, right?
Yeah. I love broccoli.
Yeah, my kids also like broccoli.
I mean, I'm saying that, you know.
Yeah. Right. So it's a food that you really hate.
Yeah, right.
A food that you really hate and are just, I don't know, that's not so pleasant. Because it's a food that most people don't find terrible. It might not be your favorite food, but people find it to be tasty and edible and a normal food.
Well, actually, there is some kind of a food that they give in prisons as a punishment.
Oh.
You know, which is designed basically to be nutritious, but to be
really?
you know, like tasteless and not pleasant to eat. And they do that, you know, like as when you know somebody with, you know, instead of putting them in solitary, that's one of the things they do. You know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you know.
No, so then you wouldn't make a bracha if it really doesn't taste good at all. Then you wouldn't if it's. But that's be'etzim a food that tastes horrible. Broccoli is not. It may be subjectively for a minority
cilantro.
Of people.
That's.
Oh, so plain spices, you don't make a bracha, right? Uh-huh. If you just chomp into dried garlic or something. I mean, no, chili. Dried chili or ginger or something like that.
Right,
even something that nobody eats plain. So then, for sure, you would not make a bracha. But the issue of something that's totally subjective, that most people consider it a reasonable food, that's interesting. It's an interesting question. It's not such a bunch of thing. Water is also a problem. That water, the din is you only make a bracha when you're thirsty.
So if you take a pill in the morning then?
Correct. If you use water to take a pill and your mom is not thirsty, then you don't make a bracha on water. Then also, if your doctor told you you're supposed to drink 8 cups of water a day and your mom is not thirsty, but you set a timer that once every hour you're drinking a cup of water, then you don't make a bracha on that water. It's important. It's important to realize. You have to make bracha on smells as well. Kodem hareach, before you smell it. So this used to be a more of a zach. In the olden days, this was like a thing that people used to do, that they would gather around at parties and, you know, smell nice spices, not drugs.
What?
Not drugs, just like myrtle branches, for example. So you make a bracha on that as well. So some people... Right, and nowadays we don't really appreciate smells the same way, so you shouldn't make a bracha on smells at all. So that's why Briskarov, also because I think he held some great rabbanim held that their sense of smell, maybe as they got older, wasn't so good. So even in Havdalah, they didn't make a bracha on the spices.
Oh, really?
Because they felt that nowadays we don't appreciate smells the same way, so we should not make a bracha on smells ever.
Oh, So there's this practice that they used to have anyway, you know, on Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
Going and having, you know, like a, you know,
snuff?
You know, something or other, yeah. Something used to, like, used, I don't know, stuff I've.
Lemon, whatever.
So it can help make your 100 brachas as part of the idea.
You could do you could do that. We don't really accept this idea that you don't make a bracha on smells. If you smell something intentionally because you want to enjoy the smell, we hold that even nowadays you should make the
make
a bracha.
Baking cookies.
Oh.
Hey.
Avalo acharav. You don't make a bracha, an after bracha on smells. Uchlol shadov ra'kol she'aguf nenebo kavu ba'bracha. Anything that the body enjoys. V'chein chiyavuna levarach Hashem lo dos levana v'alkol atov v'shar gemala ba'asoseinu mitzvosa v'ayikar. So when you make a mitzvah, when you do a mitzvah, so then you should thank God for giving us the mitzvah to sanctify us. V'amru she'mevarachin alein over las yos, when you make a bracha on a mitzvah right before you do it. V'inyin hu l'dayti ketam anizkar samach b'kriyas ha'torah. You make the bracha before because your intellect has to appreciate what you're about to do and focus on the mitzvah. Like an extra way to get kavana when you do the mitzvah. Uchmochen chiyavuna levarach birchas ha'shvach. Habori al otzem glurosa, that some things that you, when you experience, you're supposed to make a bracha to praise God for the greatness of things He does. You go to ruah hayom lifrakim, when you see the ocean and you haven't seen it for a while, you make a bracha. Shasos yamagodol the chayotzeb elu anyonik veshemuskar perakaruah, and various things, lightning, thunder, various ways that you have brachas hashvach as well.